A grant-making program to solve a grand supercomputing challenge is underway from the Office of Science and Technology Policy. Several disciplines are coming together to eventually create low-power, brain-like supercomputers that can enable advances in many fields like aircraft design, autonomy, and climate modeling. Tom Temin discussed the program with Mike Medor, director of the National Nanotechnology Coordination Office in the National Science and Technology Council.
So this grand challenge is focused on the development of a new type of computer that can process and interpret large amounts of data, learn from the data that it's been processing, and use that knowledge to solve problems that it has not faced before, and do all of this with the efficiency of the human brain. So today's supercomputers use megawatts of energy, and our brain functions on just 20 watts. What we need to do to be able to address this challenge is really to look at new computing architectures that go beyond the conventional von Neumann approaches and move beyond conventional transistors and their physical limitations. So nanotechnology has a significant role to play in this, but it's not just nanotechnology. It's computer science to develop new computing architectures. It's cognitive sciences to understand how the brain operates and see if there are ways that we can emulate that. And the role of nano in this is really in several different areas. In advanced materials, primarily 2D materials like graphene, nanoelectronic devices and interconnect technologies, and then nanomanufacturing.
All right, so graphene, is that the substrate for a new type of transistor, or are we getting away from that whole idea altogether?
We're getting away from that. The idea of conventional transistors, and graphene is actually a single layer of carbon atoms. Has the highest electron mobility known to man, mechanically robust, and there's a lot of work that's going on to investigate how that can be applied in electronic circuitry.
Other research is looking at cryogenics, or freezing things so cold that the resistance disappears.
Right.
But you're looking at something that might be happening at room temperature?
These materials are inherently much more conductive than
metal.
More conventional metals, yeah. And so you don't need to get down to cryogenic temperatures to be able to do that. But there are a variety of different so-called 2D nanomaterials. They're called 2D because they have a sheet-like structure. So graphene is one of them, but there are others that are being investigated as well.
Well, it might help to step back just a bit and describe what exactly is nanotechnology. Is it very tiny mechanical structures?
So nanotechnology is a nanometer is one billionth of a meter, and when you get down in the scale of 100 or so nanometers or less, conventional physics breaks down, and it gives rise to new phenomena that you don't see at larger length scales. And so the whole idea behind nanotechnology is understanding how those phenomena operate, what gives rise to those phenomena, and how we can exploit them and control them to make advanced materials, advanced electronic devices, advanced coatings, things like that. So
it sounds like this grand challenge that that you're pursuing is really several things. One is a machine that self-learns, but also the challenge is to be able to do that in a way that doesn't use all the power that the current technology uses.
Right.
So
yeah.
Two challenges.
Well, it's a major challenge with several facets.
How are you going about it? What's the approach to solving this? These many pieces of it.
So the way that we've structured these grand challenges, and the whole concept of a grand challenge is something that has been actively pursued by the Obama administration, but the whole idea behind these grand challenges is really to identify bold and audacious goals, but goals that are achievable, and in doing that, you're really solving these problems would address major national and societal challenges. And in doing this, you're really trying to create a compelling vision for what's possible that will not only engage just the federal government, but the entire community in trying to want to be a part of this and solve that problem. So participate in it, invest their resources, invest their efforts to try to solve that. And the current grand challenge really has accomplished that in that we have not just federal agencies like DOD and Department of Energy and National Science Foundation and NIST and IARPA, but also there's broad external support for this. So organizations like the Semiconductor Research Corporation and IBM, foundations like Moore and Kavli, and professional societies like the Institute for Electrical and Electronics Engineers have all expressed support for this and are doing a variety of different things to implement activities to address this grand challenge.
We're speaking with Mike Medor. He is director of the National Nanotechnology Coordination Office in the National Science and Technology Council. You mentioned several other agencies, and if you look across government and across industry, as you've indicated, lots of people are pursuing pieces of this. How do you make sure that it comes together in the direction this particular grand challenge is looking at? Because nano has applications in hundreds of areas.
Mm-hmm. So within the federal government, these agencies have representatives from these agencies have sat down and drafted a white paper that was released last month and can be found on our website, nano.gov. And that basically outlines their perspective, their vision for what needs to be addressed to solve this grand challenge pretty broadly, from advanced materials to manufacturing to devices and interconnects to software development to understanding and emulating how the brain operates. So the federal activities are being addressed through this white paper and subsequent meetings, and we will likely be holding a workshop to try to bring the broader community together to explore ways in which we can collaborate and address the challenge.
And you mentioned that this challenge is something like the other grand challenges that is very ambitious but also doable. Mm-hmm. Is there any sort of time frame that you envision?
We're looking at these grand challenges typically have a time frame on the order of 10 or so years. We don't have one specifically laid out for this, although if you look in the white paper, the white paper goes out, I believe, as far as is what needs to be done within the next 15 years.
And there are many areas that it identifies, brain-inspired approaches, mm-hmm. the fabrication and manufacturing. Sometimes a lot of great ideas founder at that level for a long time.
Right.
And then the whole software modeling and simulation pieces can happen almost independently of the fabrication. So at some point, there's a big integration challenge.
Yes, and so on the manufacturing side, the devices that will be required to make this type of a computer will really have to have exquisite performance, and so they'll have to be free of defects. And so there are a lot of manufacturing challenges that need to be addressed there.
And what is it that's being manufactured? I mean, when you make a transistor, you deposit materials on top of one another, and you do that a million times in a mm-hmm. 2-inch square. And even though it's difficult, it's well understood. The engineering of it is well understood. What are you building with nanotechnology?
So you're building the same type of thing. You're building, in terms of nanoelectronics, you are building circuits on the nanoscale. You're using nanoscale elements to construct those. For this type of a computer, I think you're going to need to look at actually device architectures, device designs that are significantly different from today's transistors, and really trying to integrate processing and storage into a single chip or a single device.
And when you add it all up, are there certain real-world problems that you can see could be attacked
sure.
much more effectively once this technology does come together?
Yep. So you can think about, processing large amounts of data, computational codes to look at things like turbulence modeling for aircraft. Solving those codes would be significantly enabled by a device such as this. You could think about applying this to develop more autonomous robots and vehicles, to develop intelligent prosthetics that can integrate motion and sound and vision, and then plan and understand from your environment. I'm actually on loan from the NASA Glenn Research Center in Cleveland for this position, and I mentioned the computational codes for modeling turbulence, but things such as processing the data that Earth-observing satellites see to look at climate change or resource utilization, things like that would definitely be enabled by a computer that could operate with this type of efficiency and this type of performance.
And do you worry that these machines would get together and say, you know what, we don't need those flesh and blood people anymore?
I don't think that's going to be an issue.